You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, it's the Anfield Wrap with Josh Sexton, Adam Melia, Neil Jones, and me, John Gibbons. I am in the host seat. Don't worry, Neil, we'll be back tomorrow. He's just having a few days in Ireland. People worry when Neil misses a show.
Yeah,
they think it's the end of the world.
Where is he? The Twitter rumours start. He's out for the season.
I think it's because he averages seven a day. When he has a weekend off, people really notice it. But no, he is back in. He's back in work tomorrow. So don't worry, he did watch the game. I'll be interested to hear what he thinks about it. But before all that, obviously, we'll have the opinions of Josh, Adam, and Neil on Liverpool's 3-1 defeat at Arsenal. But just a couple of announcements first up before we get going properly. As ever, we are sponsored by Greene King Sport this season. There is loads of great live sports on the TV at the moment, from the Premier League, the FA Cup, AFCON, which is wild. I will have a pint for Ivory Coast if anyone is up for it. You've got to keep an eye on them. And outside of football, obviously darts and even the Six Nations, if that takes your fancy. I always try and get rugby chat in now when Neil's not here, just to needle him. Get out for the Six Nations, put your brown shoes on, enjoy yourselves. Why not? No one's here to judge you. Don't settle for the dodgy stream. If it's on the telly, it's on at your local Greene King across the huge HD screens. If you download the Greene King Sports app, you will also receive 10% off every single drink whenever there's a game on. We'd also encourage everyone to follow Greene King Sports on Instagram, where you'll get, amongst other things, Neil talking about life post Jurgen Klopp. Also, the Anfield app are going back to North America in March, with shows in New York on the Wednesday, the 20th of March, at Cadigas. Then we go to Boston, Toronto, Detroit, Delaware, and Washington. So six shows in 6 nights. And Craig tells me that two of those are very close to selling out already, which is great because we haven't really pushed it. But yeah, two close to selling out already. Another two are over half sold. So if you want to come, I will be quick. It's theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live. Theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live. I'm really looking forward to it. I missed the last one, so can't wait to get out, say hello to people, and celebrate the Reds. And hopefully, we'll have a lot to celebrate by then, but not a lot to celebrate yesterday, Neil. What did you make of it? Or just a sort of a wider, before we get into the specifics and things like that, what did you make of it? I didn't see it coming personally. I don't know whether that's a bit of naivety. I was on the radio with an Arsenal fan this morning, a girl called Laura Kirk, who I really like on Twitter and on the radio as well. And she said, oh, I didn't see that Arsenal performance coming, and that made me feel a little bit better because I didn't either. But also, I didn't really expect Liverpool to struggle as much with what Arsenal were throwing at us.
Yeah, I don't think they could have any complaints to Liverpool, but I think they can have a few regrets. I think the manner in which it sort of gets taken away in the second half is really frustrating, because you felt like they'd sort of got over the bad patch in the game, and I was sort of gearing myself up really for the last 20 minutes being Liverpool heavy. You know, I thought it was going to be that theirs to win, really. Not what you want to do with the game, but it wasn't overly unexpected the way it panned out. You know, a sort of sluggish start and then Liverpool come on strong, but I think the air came out of the balloon with that second goal, and it really did. You look back and you sort of, I could see Virgil's face almost in the interview that he gave with Sky afterwards. It was almost like, of all the days and all the times for that to happen, it's there. And I think it makes it a little bit easier to sort of throw it in the bin, really, and say, don't worry about it. It's just, you know, if something like that happens with Virgil and Alisson, you know, it's kind of one of those days, as opposed to it being a kind of, we played our best there and still got beat, or, you know, we played really well and we couldn't take our chances or whatever. But yeah, it was, I don't think anyone could have watched that 90 minutes and come away and thought Liverpool deserved anything else but losing, to be honest.
No, I mean that's right. There's sort of two ways to analyse the game, really, Adam, and we'll probably do a little bit of both. There's the looking at the chances and looking at, you know, XG created, you know, for relative to teams. And by almost any metric, Arsenal were sort of better than us. But it is funny in that if you'd have offered Jürgen Klopp 1-1 at 60 minutes when he brought up, you know, when he was doing the pre-planned subs, he'd have bit your hand off, I think. And then we were actually looking sort of okay at that point. So and then it is a freak goal. So it's a funny one to analyse, really, because like I said, for everything that had gone wrong up to that point and for everything we'd done badly, which was a lot, you know, we are still right in it when those subs come on at 60.
Yeah, it is a funny one to analyse. It's a funny feeling. I think I said to Josh when I came in the office this morning that, you know, we don't get that feeling very often. And I don't think I just mean losing. I think I mean deserving to lose.
Yeah.
Because by the end of the game, by not even the very end of the game, you sort of think, well, we're not getting back into this, and it is quite a strange feeling that. But as you say, you know, if you look over the whole piece, there was times when we seemed to be incredibly in the ascendancy, and it only looked like going in one direction, basically up until they score, you know, the big turning point of the game. Because, you know, I think most people would probably have bit your hand off for just 1-0 at half time at one point, and obviously we're going better than 1-0 at half time. So yeah, I think as you say, there's a few different ways of looking at it, but I think probably my preferred one is the one of that goal being the huge turning point, which is the same as Virgil and the manager said. Confidence wise, just because you mentioned it before, I know you were saying, you know, you were very confident. I was very confident, but then I think the wind came out of my sails a lot with the team changes that were forced upon us, and I sort of had a bit of trepidation about it, if it ended up being a similar shape to the FA Cup game. I thought there was the things that the changes that we kind of maybe had to make, basically, might end up making sort of a difference, because you just know how good they are in midfield. That's the one thing they kind of always seem to have, and that plus the crowd being up and a bit of luck that going the other way for them, you sort of think, well, you know, it might not be as much our day as out. Because I mean I was on the post-match show after Chelsea games, so I'm like a meme, you know, like, we're going to win the league, oh, we're fucked after 3 days. Nobody find those clips and put them together, but yeah, it was you sort of don't want to go too far the other way, but yeah, there was a bit of a deflation slightly before the game kicked off for me.
Yeah, I know what Adam's saying there, in that, you know, when the Szoboszlai news sort of sneaks through on Saturday night, and you're thinking, oh, is it people just haven't spotted him so on the walk, or is this an actual sort of squad thing? Then there was little rumours that he was on the bench, and then he sort of, you know, wasn't there at all. And it's funny with injuries or whatever it is, you know, that there's sort of up with them, whether injuries or illness, but missing players, because sometimes you feel like you can carry it, and we've had a lot missing and played well. Sometimes I always feel like when you can do a like for like swap. So, for example, Konate is going to be spending now, isn't he? And I'm like, well, Quanta will just play. Yeah. And like, I'm not worried about it at all. Not just because it's Burnley, but just because I feel like, you know, Quanta's sort of proved he can sort of come in and do that. Similar with sort of, you know, different people in different areas. When I saw the forward line, for example, and I was like, well, yeah, that sort of makes sense to me. You know, Darwin will just sort of come on. But there was something about the Szoboszlai one, Josh, that I don't know. It just felt like whatever we would have done to replace him would have left us sort of a bit imbalanced. And even if it had been Jones who'd have missed out, and then Gravenberg would have played that side with Szoboszlai, I would have sort of felt a little bit better. And that's not necessarily because Szoboszlai is playing well better than Jones at the moment, because I think they're both sort of doing well, and obviously Szoboszlai's been out. But I don't know. I think there's a roundabout way of saying that it was more that who was missing really, rather than and the profiles and who was able to come in and sort of do a similar job that worried me more than the fact that, because people are always going to be out.
Yeah, and it's the sort of, I guess it's the strange thing about the balance of a squad in general. Like, I've been thinking about this a lot since the game finished, and that, you know, if you ask me, I would say that Liverpool have got one of, if not the strongest squads in the Premier League. And then so I'm almost then questioning myself, being like, well, why were you so sort of downtrodden when you didn't see that Szoboszlai was even in the squad, and why were you so downtrodden when you saw that Nunes was just fit enough for the bench and stuff like that? And you're right to say that it's as much what you miss in there as what you gain in Gravenberch has had, you know, a pretty tough start to life at Liverpool. He's had his moments. I just think it is such a balanced thing, like you say, and I think it may be, to sort of half disagree, I think it probably would still be as strong if it was Jones, because I think you've seen that Jones, if it was Jones missing, I should say, you've seen how much balance Jones does bring to that midfield. I think that's the quality that him and Szoboszlai in particular have brought this season, is just how good they are going backwards as much as going forwards. And Adam's right to point out that Arsenal's midfield is so strong, and I almost found myself fuming during the game yesterday that Jorginho was having as good a game as he was, and I couldn't figure out whether it was that Liverpool were making him look good or whether he's just, you know, he is a more talented player than maybe I want to give him credit for, because he did look like he sort of controlled that game for the most part for Arsenal yesterday in a way that, you know, Declan Rice just got to basically be a physical presence in midfield, and Martin Odegaard got to be a bit of everything to every man and be the thorn in the referee's side all game and put in a sort of, you know, a real captain's performance almost. And that was the thing. I didn't feel like Liverpool had many hard lines in the game. You could maybe argue, you know, a couple of things around, you know, referee decisions. I don't think that contributed to Liverpool losing the game in the end, as we've all highlighted. I don't think Liverpool deserved anything from the game, but I think Liverpool's bad luck comes before kickoff, as you say, with you know, the Darwin news, which we've maybe known for a couple of days, albeit we were reassured by the fact he trained on Friday. And then the Szoboszlai thing is the one that sort of catches you completely unawares.
Yeah, he's interesting on Nunes, because he sort of suggests before the game that he could have started, yeah, but yeah, it was more of a tactical thing. You know, I wonder whether he'd have made that tactical switch if he hadn't have been sort of, you know, carrying it. But, you know, were you surprised to not see him in there, and were you surprised to see the midfield that he did pick? Because although Szoboszlai's out, he did have other options. He could have started Elliott. There was maybe even a bit of talk that
Gakpo, maybe,
yeah, Gakpo or even Trent, pushing Trent in there and going with Gomez and Robertson. You know, he did have other options there. None of them are perfect, but
no,
he didn't have to pick that team.
He did, well, did he? I mean, he says he did, because he says he knew Trent couldn't do 90. You've got to assume Robertson couldn't do 90 after, you know, hasn't done 90 yet. Thiago was on the bench, it looked like 6 minutes was a bit much for
really
Thiago.
He really passed to them, didn't he?
Yeah,
he did.
You know, I don't think Thiago would have been on the bench had they had the options. Obviously, Bradley, with the sad news, I think that was another big blow. I haven't mentioned him yet, but I think him and Szoboszlai in the same area of the pitch, that's so much legs that Liverpool lost from the team, you know, and so much confidence really from the team in an area where Arsenal are simultaneously strong in an attacking sense and weak in a defensive sense. So Liverpool were not only weaker defensively, but they were unable to take advantage of Arsenal's weakness as well. So I think that removes, Bradley being out removes the possibility of playing Trent in midfield. I think once you know you're going to be taking Trent off, I think putting Nunes on the bench actually made sense, because you didn't want to sort of be in a position where you were making three changes that weaken your team. At least you've got one up your sleeve that potentially strengthens it. And I'll add to that the fact that the players who came in didn't play well.
Yeah.
You know, that was the main thing. I mean, Gravenberch had a nightmare, really. Trent, 14 passes I think he completed in the match, and you're like, Trent, you know, like it's usually up near 100 most games, you know, if he plays 90 minutes, but he was just so off it really, and he wasn't influential in the game at all. And give a lot of credit to Arsenal, they started well, and they've done that quite regularly against Liverpool, haven't they, the last four games. I think they've come flying out the traps against Liverpool, and it's been a storm to sort of weather. But yeah, I think having two players missing from the team who were both in form, you know, from the midweek and in the same area of the pitch, I think was just a little bit too much. I actually thought Liverpool got a decent grip of it when they moved Curtis back into that sort of second sitting midfielder, they got on the ball a little bit more and they started playing a bit. And at the start of the second half, they were having some joy.
Yeah.
But it was only really a 10-15 minute period in the game that they ever looked kind of comfortable. And I think yeah, it was a team. You could have maybe predicted some of the issues, but I also think they were massively highlighted by the fact that the players just didn't play well enough at all.
Yeah, the manager's got to pick someone and throw someone in, as any Adam, and that's the thing, really. And like I say, I don't think any of his solutions were perfect, but would you have liked to have seen him done something different? And you think if he had his time again, he might do?
I thought about it because, as I say, it was worrying me, but I couldn't really think of another way around it myself. Yeah, I think possibly, you know, if the Sir Bosley news lands late, maybe should he change his mind about the Darwin thing? Because I think he'd sort of made up his mind when he was that Darwin was on the bench probably on the Friday, and then he'd kind of reverted back to his earlier in the season, Nunes and Elliott, you know, changed things on impact on 60. So I think he's sort of wedded to that idea. I mean, I'm just guessing, but so I mean, there isn't anybody else that you kind of could put in there other than Gravenberg, and yet it sort of seemed slightly inevitable. The only other person we haven't mentioned is Endo's reported back for training today.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, it, that came if that had come a couple of days earlier, then you know, you could see that might have been made a really different story. As Neil was just saying there, that despite Klopp mentions that Macca and Kurt were getting that, you know, getting the ball in quite good areas, and the triangle was good there, but then I think the point he was making, so we sort of it sounded a little bit like a criticism of Trent. He was like, could Trent have got the ball in a few more times? I think it was more like Arsenal had cut off the supply to Trent.
Yeah. That's how I read that. Yeah,
and also when you've got Martinelli there, it is in your mind, isn't it, that like, don't take a risk here, because if we lose, I mean, the first thing he did in the game, he ran 60 yards beyond Canate, didn't he? And everyone's, oh wow, that was quick. So it does naturally lean towards, and you could see Arsenal, I think Arsenal's sort of plan was get Canate on the ball from the Liverpool perspective, because if he wants to play it to Trent, we can bite, and if he doesn't, he's not very good in terms of playing the other way, you know, across the pitch or through the lines or diagonally. So
and Martinelli can beat him in a foot race.
And Martinelli, which, I mean, I think that would have shocked a lot of people. Wouldn't it? Yeah, you know, you think, I thought Canate said, well, okay, let's have it, yeah. The other one is, you say, what could he have done? He played Gakpo in that right side of midfield in the cup and Elliott on the right wing, and it didn't work in the first half either. Yeah. And he changed it, and the game sort of changed. So I think Endo was one that you would have loved to have had him available, because you could have maybe move McAllister into that position.
Yeah.
Endo played particularly well in that game against Arsenal
of a bit crap time in the Endo thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
because now we've got a week off,
back.
And he's probably not going to play against Burnley, you wouldn't have thought. It'd be a shock if he starts that game, to me.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, depends who's available, I suppose, doesn't it? I mean, Gravenberg didn't do his chance.
No, I'm just thinking if Swaz lies back and
fingers crossed on that. It doesn't sound... It's not good news, is it?
Not?
Well, he said he's got the same area that he had the injury that kept him out for a month. It's pain in there, so fingers crossed. It's just a sort of a bit of fatigue in there, but you wouldn't want to be without him much longer. And I think what you'd also lose with Szoboszlai that you don't have with Gravenberg or Curtis in a way. Curtis a little bit more now. You don't have someone to go and overlap on that right, so there's no width in Liverpool's play without Trent, and Trent only got forward a couple of times, so you didn't have anyone sort of asking questions as Zinchenko, or I mean it would have been Kivior later. They were able to bring him on at half time, and when it happened at half time, I thought, oh, that's a momentum shift, the Liverpool are level and now they've had to bring on a weak link. But Liverpool didn't really get a chance to expose him, because Gravenberg's tendency is to dribble infield and go, you know, stay in the middle of the pitch really. So Szoboszlai has that real ability to create those kind of overloads on that right hand side, or Liverpool's right hand side, but they never had that at all really throughout the game.
Yeah, they probably deserve a bit of credit for how they made us look a bit ordinary, Adam, and I think we it's been a feature of our play, you know, when we've come up against teams and really gone at them and come at them and pressed and, you know, closing the passing lanes. It felt like it was hard for Liverpool, and I was like, are we making this look hard or are they making it hard? And I think it was probably a little bit of both.
I think to be fair, if we sometimes say, well, I wonder what it must be like for teams to face Liverpool. And I think that the we possibly experienced a bit of that yesterday, because I think even the times when the period, both sides of half time, especially after, where we were on top, I think if it was the other way around, we'd probably say, as we have a few times this season, that we sort of took our pain quite well there. It wasn't like Liverpool didn't create massively good chances in that period, really. We had some shots, which was more than we'd had in the first half. But I think that they were sort of arm's length, really. I think we were still being held at arm's length, really, by Arsenal there. So, I do think that they deserve quite a lot of credit, really. As I say that, I'm back to thinking, but why was that second goal such a big shift of momentum and shift of everything? Because despite what I'm saying about the fact that I feel like Arsenal did keep us at arm's length, I feel like we were, I don't know, maybe just being an optimist at the time watching it live, I felt like that we could possibly have been about to create some better chances before that happened. I don't know. I think our subs didn't make us any better, to be honest, either. Which has been a key feature all season. And I can't think of many times. Actually, probably the Chelsea game is another one. So that's two games in a row where our subs haven't improved us, which has been the first half of the season's main thing that have rocketed Liverpool to sort of how well we're doing. I think that is something we maybe need to. I don't know whether it's something we need to think about, or whether it is just starting players that aren't quite fully back to their, they're fit, but are they back in rhythm? Trent in particular, and Robertson. I think that's sort of twice now where, they're amazing players, Liverpool legends, but they aren't they're not really playing as well as the people they're replacing. Mm. In Bradley and Gomez, Bradley and Gomez are kind of in better rhythm and in better form than Trent and Robertson at the moment. So, we can't necessarily be surprised, even though they are who they are. So
Gomez was dreadful, wasn't he?
Yeah, we did.
I thought Gomez was dreadful in the first half. Like, he was the one of the one. Him and Van Dijk, I thought, were the two that really, like,
it was a mad
kept,
decision.
Just
that
kept
he,
getting dragged out.
It was like, just don't do that. Whatever you do, don't do that. What you've just done. Like, I was sort of so many times. You're turning towards your own goal, or you're playing the ball into someone who's under
pressure. It was
pressure.
Mad that he was doing the thing that you'd expect Trent to do.
Yeah, I mean, Gomez was much better when he went to right back, but like, I think Van Dijk set a really poor tone in the first half in terms of he was simultaneously panicky and casual. It was like two different. It was like he was panicky in moments when he didn't need to be, and then casual when it was like you need to be switched on here. Like don't do anything silly,
It was like he was trying too hard to be front footed. I think it's dead interesting the way we approached the first part of the first half. Like I always think back to Liverpool City games, like especially ones at Anfield, to be honest, where the two teams like show each other arguably too much respect. Like City and Liverpool, whenever they play each other at Anfield, it's like the start of a boxing match where they're just trying to feel each other out. And Liverpool just didn't seem to want to get involved with that with Arsenal yesterday. It was like Liverpool had heard what Klopp said in the week about wanting them to be more dominant, have more time on the ball, and the players were like, well, right, we're gonna go after everything. But then Arsenal just picked them off so many times, to the point where you wanted, the goal allowed Liverpool to reset, but you almost wanted that to come before we conceded a goal. Because the one thing, Arsenal are not team who score a ton of goals. They're a team who are dead good at defending the lead, and they're a team who are really, like, really tactically sound. So the minute you gave them the goal, you've instantly, put yourself on the back foot in sort of every sense. And like Neil says, it was almost most disappointing that it's one of your most experienced players who does get dragged out of position for the first goal, because he's trying so hard to be front foot and trying so hard to get Liverpool back and sort of seize that momentum in the game.
Yeah, and you have to factor, another day, the ball, it's a good save and it comes away and one of your players clears it and you go, wow, oh, goalkeeper bails it out there, doesn't force the sack. So there's always, the goal's obviously a massive changes in the momentum in the game, and Liverpool had luck with theirs, obviously. But I don't think you couldn't say about the start of the game that it wasn't coming. You could say it maybe about the second goal, where you go, I don't know where that's come from. That was like a bit of a dead period of the game. But the way Liverpool started the game was they were asking for trouble.
I was surprised that Arsenal didn't push harder after they scored, to be fair. It seemed like at that stage maybe they were paying us.
Maybe that's like we know how this works out. As soon as we push, they'll score and then they'll end up winning 3-1 and we'll be regretting it. But I maybe also think, did Arsenal possibly think, we feel like we can take their power without Salah. You know, we actually will be all right. You know, they won't. They might only get a couple of chances, and I don't know if they'll take them the way that they would if they had the sort of the main Salah and Nunes on the pitch.
I wonder if Klopp will learn a lot of lessons from that team selection, because you think back to like the behind closed doors season and how it basically got to a point in the season where we were all going, just stop playing midfielders in defence. And that's almost the way like you always think of football positions horizontally. But as Neil says there, we'd effectively given ourselves a whole new right-hand side in this game. And then, yeah. and then, you know, Adam mentions the subs as well. Even at the point when you bring on the subs, you've put yourselves on the back foot by changing the whole right-hand side, because then suddenly you're just changing it again when you bring all the subs on. You know, he moves Gomez to right back, moves Diaz, I think, out to the right wing, does he?
Diaz
puts Nunes right up front.
He?
Yeah.
What a back four.
Right back.
Diaz, Virgil, Thiago and Robertson.
Yeah. Absolutely wild. But, wow. but like I say, you've gone from changing the whole right-hand side to start the game to then changing it again when you make the subs. And I felt like the subs took a bit of air out of the balloon as well, to be honest. And they were the exact subs I wanted to see. But, you know, the manager comes out in the end and says, Trent, you know, couldn't have played the 90 minutes. I'd have quite liked to have seen Trent stay on. And as Neil said, you know, it's not such a slight on Gomez, because he's been so great now for so many weeks. But I think at that point you really need to show Arsenal that we're putting the foot on the throat here. But also, like, there's one of the things you could have just not changed on that side of the pitch there and kept like some sort of rhythm in the game. And it's not to say that Trent was playing supremely either, but I'd have probably just kept him on at that stage almost for, you know, we're not changing this whole right-hand side again as we did before the game.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The equaliser is such a gift, Neil. It's mad, isn't it? It's like, you know, like, it's the fact that he handballs it in as well just like adds to the kind of like calamity. The fact that, you know, we hadn't even had a shot, I don't think, up to that point.
They were literally making that point, weren't they? I think when on Sky, they were making the point that Liverpool haven't had a shot on target the entire first half, and then he scored.
And he still haven't scored.
And by the way, they still haven't had a shot on target. And I always think that when it just trickles over the line as well, it just has that little extra kind of sort of comedy value to it, doesn't it? Where you think, they had a couple of little moments just before, and it was in a similar vein, wasn't it? It was sort of working the ball from the left to the right, and then, oh, you know, I think Trent put a cross in that Gabriel done really well to reach, where you thought Gakpo was in
to
score, and they had one early in the game where Gakpo got played in by, I think it was McAllister, but they weren't looking like, it wasn't one of them where you think, oh, Liverpool are getting to grips with this game at all. It was more like Liverpool were just doing sort of the odd half decent thing. But fair play to Diaz. You know, I don't want to be cruel and say it was about all he did in the game, but it was very Diaz, wasn't it? It was very sort of
tenacious
and not giving up, and got his reward. I really wanted him to be more positive with the other opportunities that he got. He got a couple at the start of the second half where you're like, go on, like, run at them, take him in the penalty area, and he just has that way sometimes where I feel like he gets a lot of shots blocked. He gets a lot of good positions where you think, I'm not sure he's going to get the shot in, and not sure he's going to sort of really take advantage of this. Nicole, it was a gift, like you say, and you go in half time, like I say, when Kivior's coming on and Zinchenko's going off, yeah. not necessarily for the defensive element, but you're thinking, well, that's one less sort of, they're not going to, he's not going to have as much of the ball, he's not going to set as much of a tone, Kivior, as Zinchenko, and he's shown that he's got a weakness in him defensively. I did think that was a chance for Liverpool to sort of take advantage of the leveller, but yeah, they didn't, apart from that sort of 10-minute spell, they didn't really do it.
Yeah, and that's frustrating for me, Adam, really, because, like I said, I do think they start the second half well in that comparatively, it's probably our best period of the whole game. That's sort of 45 to about 55 or 60. You know, we get a few shots away, not great ones, not great opportunities, but we're at least sort of pressing. But you do wonder whether, I think sometimes, you know, do we understand our full power as Liverpool Football Club? And, you know, again, I speak to Laura, the Arsenal fan, this morning, she was like, when that goal went in, I was like, oh, here we go. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I bet the Arsenal players were thinking it as well. Oh, Liverpool are going to do that thing that Liverpool do, and just sort of take a game away from you. And then we just sort of don't really. We just sort of, you know, don't have either the confidence or the ability in that game to really kind of go like, oh, you've let us back in this game. You're idiots. Now we're going to punish you.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I spoke to Dan Austin at halftime because he was in the same pub as me, and we both said we'll win now.
You know, yeah,
I thought so as well.
You know, having not enjoyed any of the first half, basically, you suddenly do think, you know, that we'll win now, and as you say, Arsenal would have all been a lot of them will have been thinking the opposite. Their players would have been thinking, you know what. The cliche, and it's a terrible time to concede. They'll have been thinking, here we go again. And that's, it's why it's a real head scratcher, isn't it? As we sort of said at the top of the show, it is quite hard to put your finger on exactly why it is that it doesn't happen like that. It's a really tricky one, and I suppose that only time tells, really, isn't it? You know, that it may be that we have a couple more of these this season, which would be terrible. But you sort of don't think so. You sort of think that there were a lot of circumstances there which meant that the kind of, you know, the key things that we have in terms of legs and mentality, you know, some of them key players weren't there or weren't able to perform as they normally can, and coupled, as I say, with the performance, which I think it, you know, we shouldn't kind of underrate or downplay. I thought Arsenal's performance was really, really good in the way of shutting us down, as well as in the fact that they created some pretty decent opportunities, even though the ones they scored were a bit jammy.
I think the most frustrating period of the game for me, actually, Josh, was after we conceded the second, because, you know, we go for it's about 20 minutes, isn't it, between the second goal and Konate getting sent off, and that's sort of game over when Konate goes. But then didn't feel like we were creating enough in that period anyway. I've had a little look at the XG chart on StatsBomb, and we go from 0.23 to 0.33 in terms of, you know, goals are created. So, you know, or chances created sort of in that period, really. And that's not really what you associate with Liverpool. You think, you know, you go a goal down and you think, you know, the subs have come on. There's still quite a few, you know, fresh players and explosive players on there. You know, even if we don't equalise, I would have expected us in normal circumstances to have a bit more of a go than we did.
Yeah, I think the goal felt like too much of a huge body blow, and it comes back to what you were saying before. Like that's down to the players on the pitch as how, you know, listen, you can take that moment, you can say, you know, Virgil and the keeper have sort of have had one there. It's nobody's fault. We crack on from this now and sort of build back. But I think these Arsenal games in recent times you've seen becoming a real mentality war, and in most cases, whether Liverpool have won the game or not, it feels like Liverpool have sort of got the better of that mentality war, because Arsenal have mostly got the better of the play on the pitch. You definitely say that in the FA Cup game. You'd probably say it in the first one at Anfield before, I think, is it the Xhaka starting on Trent one, maybe is the sort of the first of this series of, you know, where Arsenal have dominated and then suddenly let it slip to Liverpool. And it had all the sort of hallmarks that yesterday, but Liverpool also lost the mentality battle as well as the sort of technical on-pitch battle. And I think that second goal was proof of it, is how much Liverpool allowed that to take the wind out of their sails. And it's a minor concern, that in the sense that I don't think it's not a pattern that's developed at all by any stretch of the imagination this season. It was massively a pattern last season where Liverpool found themselves being far too easily discouraged by sort of adversity in games and by moments like that happening in games. And I guess your only concern in that would be is it down to the personnel who made the mistakes? Is it the fact that it is Alisson and Van Dijk made everybody else go, well, fucking hell, if it can happen to them, it can happen to any of us. And then suddenly everyone almost plays sort of too much within themselves from that point. You could argue there's a few, you know, little things that go against Liverpool in between that period of time as well. But, you know, there's sort of no excuse for Liverpool to have that moment to reset, to not build back from that, and to only sort of, you know, create, what's that, 0.10 XG from that moment on. You'd definitely like to see Liverpool do more from that point. And the manager will take some of that on himself as well. And I'm sort of, in some ways, pleased. In some ways, it feels a bit unnecessary, just because we love them all, for everybody to sort of be coming out and claim that it's my fault. But the manager does take some responsibility within that, I think, in terms of, you know, he can find ways in terms of the structure of the team, in terms of his substitutes, to sort of make sure Liverpool do go on and play, you know, the best football they've played in that period, but they don't. And then, as you say, the game sort of gets away from them from there.
Yeah, we're not able to sort of get our forward players, even the ones who come on, into dangerous positions. It was funny, I was in the ground, and when Nunes come on, someone, when he mates next to me, said, oh, he's going to score from his first touch. And then they scored about 8 minutes later, and he went, don't worry, Nunes is going to score on his first touch. Which is sort of making the point that I don't
even... put one into the away end,
yeah,
with that one.
Oh, God, that was awful. Yeah, you should have crossed that.
Absolutely, and that was sort of, you know, It's sort of simultaneous what people love and what they want to see change about Nunes, isn't it? It's just that sort of calmness. It's like, you know,
you did have a few in the box, didn't you?
Yeah, you've done the sort of the hard way. You're the first player really who's got any sort of, you know, direct kind of beating an opponent in the penalty area and manufacturing some space. And I didn't like Gary Neville's commentary, but I knew what he meant when he said, I think he said he wants. And he didn't. He stopped himself and he's talking to. He said, "But I knew what he meant." He did. He did want that. But that was about it, wasn't it? You know, there was not really. I mean, McAllister had a couple of shots from outside the box. I think there was one. Did Curtis have one sort of where he? That was early in the half, wasn't it? Where he sort of cut in and bent it around the far post. But you never really thought, even when Liverpool were getting crosses into the box, you never really thought there was even panic in the Arsenal defence. I never got that impression, really. And it's not like Liverpool. They do, even if they're not at the races in terms of their own play, they do kind of put the opposition in a position where they're either hurrying the clearances or they're conceding corners or they're doing anything. It just felt a little bit like Liverpool were banging their head against the wall, really, and it wasn't happening. It can happen, can't it? You know, it's what shouldn't get lost in amongst it is it's probably one of the hardest places to go in European football to go and win. I know Jürgen said that, didn't he, afterwards?
I think they might win the Champions League, you know. I think, like, no one's really talking about it at all.
They've got Porto in the last 16, haven't they? So you think they'll get
around
that.
Like, they've beat City at home already this season. I think, like, I don't know.
And I think, I don't like everything that he does, Arteta, and I don't like everything about his sort of style, but I think the biggest thing you can say about him is fair play. He's got a club that's struggled for atmosphere and sort of togetherness. He's built it, hasn't he? You know, he's got it going. Sometimes they can lose it when I think they have a sense of entitlement sometimes, and that can come and bite them in games. But he has got that place for, like, formidable to go there. I think West Ham are the only team that have had the result there this season, apart from Liverpool in the Cup. But, yeah, it is a tough away game to go there. So to go and expect that you're going to maybe have, you know, the things your own way is unrealistic. But I think Liverpool were too far the other way. I think you would expect to have more than Liverpool had.
It probably felt even tougher yesterday as well, in the sense that I think, like, that you see in their celebrations at the end, and listen, like, everyone's, you know, so many people are being the celebration police on Twitter, and then people are policing the celebration police as well, which is always a dead funny thing. It's like everyone's just chasing each other around social media, which is why I just stayed off it last night.
World's full of busies.
Exactly, yeah. but Arsenal have done really well, I think, to make that game feel do or die. Like, they must have said to themselves to some degree, because Jurgen Klopp said in the week again, he was like, I can't make the message to the players, if we win this, we're 8 points ahead, because that's not what motivates these players, like, to have a big gap to one of your rivals. But on the contrary, I think Arteta can almost say that to us. He can be like, if you lose this, like you might as well kiss goodbye to the title race. And I think you see Arsenal's players sort of almost rise to that challenge, and then you probably see it in the celebrations at the end a little bit as well. I think you definitely see it in the atmosphere. It feels like there is a real sense around Arsenal yesterday. Like we really, really need to win this football match. And Liverpool, I don't want to go like sort of too much into the mentality, because I just don't think it's been a broad issue this season. I think it was an issue in the game yesterday, and that's something for Liverpool to sort of, you know, think about, particularly in the big games going forward. Liverpool have been great at beating, you know, bottom 10 sides and teams sort of like that this season. It's been in the bigger games where I've sort of worried a little bit, like Neil mentioned before, they didn't cause Arsenal enough panic. I think Liverpool have also been guilty of panicking too much in big games. You see it against United at home, that it ends up just becoming a crossing fest, basically, where Trent's just, you know, whipping balls into the back post and hoping that something comes off. And it's where I sort of sympathised with Nunes a bit yesterday, and also believe that he contributes to it by smashing the ball the way he does, is that, you know, he's almost thinking like I'm not just going to do the hit the ball and hope here, and he's maybe not got the right angle to see where Jota is and stuff like that. But then
he definitely did hit the ball and hope.
that's what I mean. It's half the problem is he's going, I'm not just going to hit this across the box and hope. But he's like, what I am going to do is hit it towards the top corner and hope.
Yeah, when he wants to make something happen, doesn't he? And you can sort of forgive that, albeit like he does it in the worst possible way. But I think when you put big strikers on the bench, they come on and they just want to sort of win the game.
It's his game, isn't it? You know, he's explosive and he's spectacular, and you'd sort of rather, I suppose you'd rather have him doing that than maybe Gakpo being anonymous, or, you know, Jota being sort of easily marked. You know, probably the quietest I've ever seen Jota in a game, in terms of he just didn't really have any impact physically, did he? You know, he was swallowed up a little bit. I can't recall him having a shot. He might have done, but I don't recall him having an effort on goal. He was played really well by Arsenal, I thought Diaz was played particularly well by Ben White, you know, physically as much as anything. And at least when you bring in Nunes on, you know you're bringing someone who's not going to be cowed by that sort of physical battle. He's going to embrace it, but you also have to take that sometimes he's going to embrace it a bit too readily.
Yeah, it just all led to a bit of a lot of frustration, Adam, because I don't think the Canate red cards like that big moments in the game, because I think we're sort of done by then. And I can't think of another game this season, even when we haven't necessarily played well, where we've been at 85 minutes, I've not thought there's something in this for us. Do you know what I mean? And I haven't sort of given up or anything, because you never know in football, and you see that at the end of the first half. But I feel like on the few occasions where we have been down in games this season, in the 84, 85th minute or around that, I've always felt like there's something in this for us. Or even sometimes if we get one, we'll get two and win it here. Whereas that one, even by the Canate red card, I'm not thinking, oh, game over now, because I sort of already, you know, got to that point.
Yeah, I think there's been, certainly since we've been playing sort of at our top level for the past few months, it hasn't felt like that. But I mean, my concern of the broader pitch for this season, I think Josh has sort of just touched on it as well, is the bigger away games. You know, I think there aren't that many, and you know, you can't lose sight of how tough a fixture that is. Yesterday, it's the second or third toughest, I would say, of your season. We've the worry, I suppose, is that we've still got Everton and Man United to come, haven't we? You know,
they're a while away now, though. I've put here, we don't play another top 10 side away now until April, and probably Everton is likely to be April as well, if we go through
with the cup.
I think it's a tricky one, really, because it does sound a bit like you're making excuses, because actually we had some really good players there. Both, you know, we had a great bench yesterday. The starting lineup wasn't bad. You know, you've seen that starting lineup win games, and you'd back it to win most fixtures. And yeah, we end the game with lots of good players on as well. So I do think that the reason to kind of be positive about that, despite you know, dropping points in another, I say another, you know, we have lost and drawn a few, haven't we? Chelsea, Tottenham, City, and then this one. So we sort of haven't really. We had a big win in the league and a big Newcastle. The reason to be cheerful is that I do think that there was the extenuating circumstances, kind of mainly around like players coming back from fitness, or players just not performing that well yesterday, not not just because of the good performance of Arsenal. I think we're unlikely to see all of those things, combining. And we've like patted ourselves on the back so many times since Salah and Endo have been away at how well we've kind of got through, and also been happy with our kind of luck, the timings of certain players coming back from injuries just as another one goes off. And yesterday, I think that it sort of caught up with us a little bit.
I think also you can lose games like this as long as you win the ones that you're supposed to win, and the next four in particular, you're looking at them and you think, well, if you win all four of them, you can swallow getting beat at Arsenal.
Sure.
You don't want it to become a, oh, they beat Burnley and then they drop a point. They drop points at Brentford and they drop points at Forest, and they have a tough time against Luton. You don't want it to become a thing where it's like just the momentum stalled. You can take a one if all of a sudden you're on a four game winning streak after losing at Arsenal. It's like, well, that's fine, isn't it? Arsenal got West Ham away next week.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if they don't win that. So you're like, well, the damage isn't, don't worry about the damage in terms of the Premier League effort.
It's like the shape of the season.
Yeah.
So the shape of the season kind of changes yesterday, doesn't it? But you're not quite sure how yet. So Arsenal could run away
City
with
could
it at
lose
Christmas.
Tonight at Brentford, yeah. and you go, what
are we
worried about?
So I guess what we kind of expect hasn't happened yet. You expect City to win the next two games, and then the shape of the season is different again because it's massive scoreboard pressure on Liverpool and whether we can respond to it. But it is one of them where we just the only way you can respond if you are Liverpool is you just have to, as you say, you have to win the next four. It makes Brentford a big game, and we still never won there.
No, exactly. I mean, Burnley's probably the one you'd pick, isn't it? Burnley or Sheffield United at home, I think, would be the next game you'd pick because you think they're not very good. But also Burnley aren't going to they're not going to bully it or make it really horrible game. Sort of, you're going to have a lot of the game. You're going to be able to have a bit of fun with the game, or you should be able to if you play. So that's I think that's why a lot of people can take it, because you think, well, should win next weekend. I think City have got Everton, but City have got Everton and I think they dropped points against them last season. Arsenal got West Ham. You're like, well, I'll have our fixture next week. I'd be more surprised if there was a 2-point swing against us than for us. Then you've got Brentford for Luton in midweek, haven't you? That one's been moved. And the fact that that's been moved, you say it's awkward in the week of the Carabao Cup final, but you know what? It puts 3 points on the board if you win it. And you're looking into the weekend and you're going, well, it's a bit of a false league table. We're 8 points clear there, and go on, away you go. Mm. And all of a sudden you create that pressure. So I expected better from Liverpool. I thought they'd play a lot better than they did. I thought they'd get a result at the weekend. But I don't think that will define Liverpool's season, a loss at Arsenal. I think what we'll look back on at the end of the season, if Liverpool do miss out, is you'll say, well, that game we should have won, as opposed to a game that, a draw would have been a good result from anyway. You've only lost a point from sort of an acceptable result.
Yeah, draws are crap.
We'd be
pleased with the draw, but there's only one point more.
Who's the one? Is it Man United?
United have got like two, haven't they, or something?
Yeah,
and then someone else down there has only got like three or four.
The only draw they've had this season, is it? Liverpool in the league?
Yeah,
I respect that. Just win or get beat.
Yeah, get beat if United.
Okay, let's sort of finish up on a few reasons to be positive. And this week off, I'm not sure how to judge from a personal point of view. I think I'd rather manage to move Luton to Wednesday, because I think for the fan base, it'd be nice to sort of get it out of our system and see our team win again and feel a little bit better. But for the players in the squad, I don't think they'll be smarting too much from the weekend, and it's a chance to get a few back, is what you'd say. It was nice to see Mo Salah running about last week. He's got to be in contention for the weekend. We'll see on Szoboszlai. It's further, more training for Trent, more training for Robbo, more training for Thiago,
Endo
back in the country and stuff
Connor
like that.
Bradley will be back, I think.
Yeah, so it does feel like you're doing a great job here, Neil. Any more?
No, I think that's it, isn't it? Hopefully it's a boss like that.
Yeah. We'll sort of see on him. There is, it could be a really good week this for Liverpool, Josh. It could be a week where you see the manager on Friday in the press conference saying, Arsenal wasn't great, but we feel like we put a lot of things right and we've got people sharper and we're ready to go.
100%. I think Neil's right to say before as well that I think it being Burnley at home comes at the perfect time, and I'm not saying that to sort of, you know, be disrespectful to Burnley in any way, and I'm sure Klopp won't ever do that in his press conference. He'll be big in Vincent Kompany up and picking out specific players' names in his press conference on Friday like he always does to sort of really hammer
he
home
makes
that
everyone
point.
Sound on, like,
honestly, yeah,
he's like, to watch
yeah.
them and he's done well to put, I didn't even know who started yeah, the field yeah. for them. He's done with Watford and everyone used
on,
to do.
Honestly, like the names he sort of plucks out the air, but you know there's a chance there for, you know, if you didn't think Trent looked like a player who was match sharp at the weekend or particularly in rhythm, it's a really good chance for him to get match sharp and back in rhythm. I'd be 100% starting him and Robertson as the fullback pair in this, because I think you almost need to get that first Liverpool 11 some minutes back into their legs, and, yeah. and those two being sort of really key parts of that. I don't know if I agree on your Quan's point before, and that I think I'd just put Joe Gomez into centre half. I think he probably deserves to sort you? Of stay in the team at this point. Yeah, I do, and I think Quan's almost become the de facto replacement for Van Dijk as much as the right hand side. I think Gomez has been broadly better when he's been on the right hand side defence than on the left. So I think you're almost looking at them as sort of two different options now, where for the right hand side the options are Matip, Gomez and Konate, and for the left hand side it's Quanza and Van Dijk. So I think I'd be going for Gomez in that one. And then there's maybe an argument for lads like Gravenberch and Gakpo to be going again, and it's not to say that they've done a ton to deserve that. It's almost this idea of we need to make sure everyone's got sharpness and rhythm in their legs now, because you know February's not a month where Liverpool have a load of fixtures, but it's a really good chance for Liverpool to sort of, you know, beyond this Arsenal result now, put some momentum going into March when the fixtures do start coming thicker and faster again. And that's where I am almost glad to have this week, because I think you could be in a potential complete disaster. And we've seen Klopp seasons unravel for Liverpool as well, where Liverpool have had one body blow of a result and then suddenly they go to Luton on a Wednesday and Luton have got, you know, Wednesday night, their fans are up, they've got the bit between their teeth, Ross Barkley fucking scores one off his arse, and suddenly Liverpool's season is drifting away from them. It's a negative way to look at it, but I'm quite glad that you get your week to sort of recoup. They get to, you know, analyse the mistakes they made on the training ground and stuff. Have a big chat about it. Have a big chat about the mentality going into the weekend, and then fucking leather Burnley everywhere.
Fucking leather Burnley everywhere. What's your leathering Burnley position, Adam?
Just get me in to do the team talk.
Yeah, I think I decided this morning that I would have liked it to have been midweek, but that's just because I like Jurgen Klopp making me feel better by doing a press conference, and I really need to get over that at some point soon.
got some bad news for you, Adam.
I know. Maybe I'll get you in, Josh, to do my team talks to pep me up. there's not many of them left, but I think it does. It comes at a good time, and I know sometimes we prefer rhythm and we like playing two games a week, but it's a good one at this stage to get everybody back. And I sort of agree, I think, with what Josh is saying, that I expect it to be a what do you say, weakened team? Probably, you know, that's not the best way to put it, but the team that kind of that goes again for a couple of those players as I sort of keep banging on about the form that we were missing yesterday. You can't sort of get that by anything any other way other than getting more minutes into some of those legs. So yeah, Gakpo and Gakpo, Gravenberch, and especially Robertson and Trent, because we can't keep looking worse when they're on the field, really, can we? We need to we need them to be back as fully themselves for us, and showing how the team works at its best.
They were good, Gakpo and Gravenberch at Burnley on Boxing Day, especially in the first half. Yeah. I thought Gakpo played off the left, Gravenberch played in the midfield. I think it was Endo, Gravenberch, and
Gakpo had been good up until Norwich, really.
Yeah, I know. I mean, shouldn't I don't do it, but I did notice he was trending. He was on my trending topics today, and I thought that won't be good. I mean,
Gravenberch was trending in the away end. Let me tell you.
I mean, I think IRL
trending.
Gravenberch sort of like this. You know, if he was an academy kid, he'd be getting a lot more stick, wouldn't he? I think, but he's that age, he's 21, he's like, he's not finished, is he? But yeah. You know, maybe the price tag makes you think he should be, but he's still in moments, and he's, you know, he does really good things in the game, but you never really feel like he bosses a game, or you feel like you come off and go, oh, God, it was brilliant today. You know, yeah. You sort of think, oh, he did that little turn, didn't he, and that run forward, but then you think, actually, he also was a bit sluggish, or a bit, he's taken off after an hour or whatever. But they played well against Burnley. That's why I'd have Quansah. Quansah was probably man of the match, I think, against Burnley in the game, playing alongside Van Dijk. I think he'll play. I don't see Gomez as a centre back anymore. Simikas we missed off as another one who's edging closer. But you could have a situation where you've got your benches like Salah, Endo, Thiago, Bradley, you know, whoever, Gravenberch, Nunes, Elliot. You know, Elliot. Yeah, you could have a thing where you're like, do you know what? You could just have you could almost have two teams out there. You could have a 60-minute team and then sort of five guns coming on at the end if needed or to get some rhythm. So I think it's a good fixture for Liverpool, and I think they should have a good squad for it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other business before we move on? A long old wait. Hope you've enjoyed that. There'll be loads more analysis of the Arsenal game for our subscribers. I'm really looking forward to the review today. There has not been loads of defeats, thankfully, for the lads to get the teeth stuck into, but there is one this weekend, and so the silver lining of the cloud is I think the review is going to be excellent today, so I'm really looking forward to listening to that for our video subscribers. There's an exciting host of five things today. We've decided the other fellas rubbish. He's past it. Sometimes he only does four. So Josh Jackson stepping up today. Looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to.
Who's on with you, Josh?
Me and Grace Maley. So it'll be a good room. We've already discussed that we're going to make sure we end it on a positive note, because I think we already got quite philosophical about the result last night. I found when the final whistle blew, that was really sad. Like I would say, unsustainably sad. If I'd have come in this morning that sad, then everyone would have felt it. So yeah, we're gonna make sure we have some things to look forward to in the Paul's future.
I find Grace Maley's got a name that goes really well into songs. I know you're a fan of that genre, Adam.
Yeah, definitely. That's what all the five things are. They're just five different songs that Grace's name goes into.
What Up All Night for Grace Maley.
Nice. Sound of the Summer.
I still think that's why Mo Salah's so popular.
Is it one of the names that you say the full name as well?
Like Solly March.
Yeah. Rule Fox. Rule Fox. You'd never call him Fox.
No, it sound ridiculous on Rule. Everybody wants to rule the world. Nice. There we are. And then also, I am hosting the weekend, unless I get kicked off that as well. But at 4 o'clock.
See, I'll get on five things.
I know. Well, we're going to be talking about 3 o'clock kickoffs, because I thought, did you see that TNT did the tweet on Saturday, which was funny?
It got a lot of response. When it basically did. Are you not entertained?
Are you? I mean, like, we're not allowed.
No, what's that? What's that? Why? What's that? No mate, I'm watching the rugby.
So we're going to talk about that on the weekend, so we're looking forward to that. So great time to subscribe to the Anfield app. Do download the app, you get some free tokens and stuff like that. And I'd also, as a last little thing from me, encourage everyone to buy Jamie Webster's album, which is out this week. Video, people who enjoyed this on YouTube will have seen a little video we did with Jamie Webster. But for those of you who listen as a podcast, basically just buy his album. That's the summary. It's 10 minutes that leads to that. Buy his album. He's got a chance to get to number one. That'd be absolutely amazing. But he needs all of our support. But we can all do it together. And if you can do that before Friday, that would be great. Thanks a lot for everyone for coming in. I feel better now, and hopefully the listeners do too. Sports Social Podcast Network.